Hi, welcome to CSI on Fire, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the fire investigation community. I'm your host, Mike Molden, and episode after episode we'll attempt to excavate the often difficult but always fascinating world of the fire investigator. Thanks very much, Lise, for coming on. You are a pioneer. I don't know if you'll end up regretting this or we'll see this as you are the first ever interviewee on CSI on Fire. So thanks very much. I really appreciate your time. I know you're very busy.
Thank you.
We'll come into that a little bit later. But I just really wanted to start off with, well, I always want to have a little kind of full disclosure bit in the sense of you and I know each other. We've known each other for probably about 4 or 5 years now, I think, maybe.
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's really just to say that we know each other. We've kind of worked together. And yeah, just take us through who you are, really, Lou, and your background in fire investigation.
No worries. Thanks for inviting me, Mike. Very kind of you. So I've been working in forensics for about the last 15 years now. I first started off with a Bachelor of Science in Forensic Science from Glamorgan University. So I always knew that I wanted to work within sort of scientific field, but I also really like people. I found it I thought, what can I do? Because I don't want to go and work in a lab for the rest of my life. For me, working in forensics was like that perfect combination of being a forensic scientist, but also getting to deal with lots of people frontline, really. I left university and I knew I wanted to get into CSI, really. My sister was a police officer, dog handler and firearms officer, had quite a few members of my family in the police. I knew CSI was where I wanted to go, but I knew it was going to be really, really difficult to get a job. Kind of thought to myself, well, what skills do I need to join the police, really, to be a CSI? So I started creating that little toolkit and up, really, thinking about getting all the skills I can get outside of public sector to give me the skills to get in. So I started working for a pharmaceutical company, specializing in spectroscopic techniques, things like HPLC and things like that. So I was working in quality control of drugs, really. That gave me lots of skills so that I could put in my application to the police and hopefully get a job. So having done that, I applied for the police. I got very lucky. Went through my interviews and things, and I got offered a job as an assistant CSI. And I did that for a couple of years. So that was working at sort of lower level crime without an aggravating factor, things like burglaries, things like that. But I always knew I loved fires, even at that point, because I'd done quite a lot of fire investigation in my foundation degree. And I knew that fire was where I wanted to go. So I got really friendly with a chap in my office, actually, who was an extremely experienced CSI and fire investigator. And he started taking me out to jobs straight away with fires. So that could have been things like fatal fires or hate crimes, mental health, that kind of thing. So I was exposed to fires sort of really early on in my career, which I was very lucky with. Anyway, in the police, I progressed up through the ranks, then became a crime scene investigator after a couple of years as a fully fledged one so that I could deal with anything sort of any level. So from your car being broken into all the way up to sort of a category one murder. Developed my skills in fire investigation through that. I also worked as a DNA analyst in an ISO accredited laboratory, which was really interesting. Became a crime scene manager as well. The very nice Mike Molden trained me on my crime scene manager's course, and that's kind of where we initially met. Anyway, in 2019, I attended a level 5 course at the Fire Service College, where I became sort of qualified fire investigator for the police then. And with that has come lots of opportunities. So I also lecture at Cranfield Forensic Institute there, in things like fire investigation, just setting up a course now for fire engineering as well. And I'm doing a master's there in explosions and explosives. That's kind of my passion as well. I'm really into explosions. But about 6-7 months ago, I just handed in my notice actually in the police after working there for nearly 15 years. And I've decided to move over into the private sector. So yeah, I've just started a job with a company called EFI Global. So I'm going to be carrying out fire and explosion investigations for them. They're an insurance company. So looking at getting more into the kind of that being my core role rather than it being sort of extra to the main role that I do, really.
Yeah, sure. I mentioned in the sort of teaser episode of CSI on Fire that CSIs don't necessarily, we're not always at fire scenes. You know, you're lucky if you get to maybe exactly 2 a month, depends on the force. So yeah, it's really interesting. Actually, I think we actually first met on the fire investigation because I came and gave a lecture and you answered all the questions correctly.
So I was that person in the back of the classroom who's been annoying.
You were the only interactive one, I think, to be honest with you. But that must have been 2018, 2019, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what? Quite a while ago then. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously we then did the crime scene managers course. We worked on that together. I think it's really interesting for those potential listeners who are interested in maybe going from the public sector to the private sector. Certainly, I mean, if you think about some of the people that we both know at EFI, John Lloyd, for example, Neil, they've all come over from the public sector as FIs and then into the private sector. And I think, you know, it's a route for, I mean, you're nowhere near retirement, Luce, you know, but it's a route for public sectors when they come to the end of their career. But yeah, I actually never knew. I never realized your sister was in the job as well. So that's interesting.
Yes, she was. She's not anymore. Yeah. So I've got quite a lot of my family in the police as well, really. But I would definitely say if you're thinking about going from public to private, that you do need to think about if you're going to be working at that higher level, sort of more specialized, you think you need to start thinking about how you can get your CV up to date. So thinking about your academia and that kind of thing, really. And I have to say, doing the master's at Cranfield, I did that part time with my job, which is quite demanding. It's a lot going on. I've got a family and things like that. But definitely, if you're thinking about moving from public to private and you're looking at working at sort of a more technical level, think about upping your CV a bit, maybe where you can get some more education and qualifications there as well to support that.
I think in the world of both CSI and FI, without the qualification, I mean, some guys, you know, if you ex-London Fire Brigade, even if you think about, I don't know, the Peter Mancy's of the world, or Dr. Peter Mancy, as he is now, and as I've mentioned, John Lloyd, etc., they've all got some kind of qualifications. I think if you want to look for the private sector, people like Hawkins, like Burgoyne's, like EFI, some of the other firms are out there, they will look for a qualification, won't they? They will look for some sort of specialist, really.
Yeah, if you're going to be given evidence in court or writing reports, working at that sort of more expert witness level rather than sort of witness of fact, you need to probably have a few more qualifications under your belt, don't you? I mean, some of these people, they've got 20 or 30 years experience. You just can't argue with that. That is astounding. If you have got some more qualifications and things, get your toolkit up together and you'll be much more employable in the private sector.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe where the Cranfield course is, because obviously I had some involvement in that. And I think you can even do short courses there, can't you? You can just tell us a bit more about that, Luce. What are you intending to do there and what's the school there?
Yeah, myself and Dr. Mary Jane Harding are going to be, well, we have run already the Introduction to Fire Investigation. We're going to be running the Fire Engineering module at the end of January and then the Fire and Explosives Investigation module at the start of March, in as part of your master's there. So they run lots of different types of master's courses. And then you can specialise in certain things like fire investigation or fire engineering. But you can also take it as a short course for credit at Cranfield as well. So we have had external candidates who have come in from, say, large electrical manufacturing companies or some of the large names, the companies out there, and you can get short course for credits. So the courses are really designed to be based not just around classroom learning, but also practical learning. On every one of those three modules, we try and expose the students and the candidates to real life learning. So that might be at the local fire service college. So we took some students last time to Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire School. That absolutely amazing facilities for learning there. Great. So the students actually got to carry out a proper fire investigation. So it's all about really creating like that collaborative learning, really, where people are learning from experts in industry. So we're getting lots of subject matter experts in as well, but also getting practical skills as well. So hopefully we're equipping people with the skills they need to actually do the job rather than just sitting there and learning about it, really.
That's true. I mean, you and I are both going to be, well, I am an alumni and you're going to be an alumni. So I did mine back in 2000, I think it was. I really chose Cranfield because of the practical element, because they've got a range and they've got a shooting range, they've got an explosive range. But the course there is very much hands-on kind of practical ed rather than academia, academic, you know. And I think that's really important, isn't it, in the sense of you can't not be hands-on in fire investigation and CSI, can you? I'm really interested, now you've moved from public sector to private sector, and I obviously did a similar thing, but what do you see as some of the differences or the challenges? I know it's early days for you, but what do you see as some of the differences and challenges already?
Yeah, it's, like I said, I'm literally just in through the door. What I would say is really refreshing is having a lot more autonomy, so a lot more control over what my day looks like, having a lot more ability to sort of manage my diary and having a few different irons in the fire. So my new boss is very keen on me doing things like additional training, delivering learning at Cranfield, supporting me through writing my thesis and things like that, which is really refreshing. It's hard to say, really. I'm quite new in. It's going to be very different from having that huge institution behind you that you have when you work for somewhere like the police or the fire brigade.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's going to be different, but I am really looking forward to sort of being able to use my mind a little bit more and maybe think about things myself, write reports from my opinion rather than kind of just following the norm, if that makes sense. So I'm really looking forward to actually sort of stepping into the shoes of the person who has an opinion, if that makes sense, rather than writing strategies and examining.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously, as a CSI, we're witnesses of fact. We're not allowed to opine. We're not allowed to give opinion. And moving from that to full-time fire investigator, you are now going to be an expert witness. You know, if I probably going to put you through some of the expert witness, Bonsole, and those types of courses, etc. From my point of view, I think it might sound strange, but I think the weight of evidence or the weight of criticism, I think, in the private sector is a bit heavier than the public sector. I've spoken to a few fire service FIs, and we obviously turn up suddenly in a suit or in our uniform, and depends if you're police or you're fire service or you're CSI civilian, but you turn up and you kind of give your evidence. And less, I found as my career went on, you were questioned less and less about certain things. Your evidence was sort of given. I found it really difficult in the sense of, in the private sector, there are differences of opinions, and other experts will, I guess, because in the private sector, there's money involved at the end of the day. And obviously, we will get into cognitive bias, we'll get into integrity and that kind of stuff later on. And perhaps we can briefly discuss it here. I mean, CSIs have to have integrity bound in. You know, we know plenty of CSIs who they've lied over a certain thing and their integrity shot and they've lost their job, they've lost their role. Whereas, you know, I found in the private sector, not the saying that the integrity is less, but obviously there's a more of a pressure from loss adjusters, there's more of a pressure there to perhaps look in favor of one way or the other. So that was a bit shocked to me. So I think that's something that will maybe you'll have to deal with, I think, speaking to other FIs. Go on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, so I obviously have just been speaking to my colleagues about this, and it's kind of mind-blowing because I'm used to having ethics, integrity, honesty and everything. It's rammed down your throat, and rightly so, it should be. You should work completely with integrity and hold your ethics close to your chest. It's really important. And to hear that maybe sometimes that could be questionable, or that even sometimes some people are advocating, is really concerning. And it is going to be a real change. And it's going to be a real, I'm used to working in a team where we're not looking at prosecuting someone, we're just looking at providing evidence, we're just looking at providing facts. So it's going to be a real change to go to an environment where I might be working with somebody from another company who was, you know, are arguing for argument's sake because they're advocating for a company. That really Yes. doesn't sit comfortably with me.
Nor does it with anyone, I don't think.
No, it doesn't, no.
I think with the police side of things, obviously we're used to full disclosure. Everything's got to be given over to avoid those miscarriages of justice. I'm not saying that the private sector is any way different. We all know there are advocates out there. There are shooting, smoking guns and people who will say things that probably, if they're not necessarily, that might be in favour or muddy the waters, you know. So I think that was something that I had to really get used to. But yeah, I mean, we know there are a small minority and the majority of people have got integrity. Because at the end of the day, of course, you know, under the forensic science regulations and the code of conduct, exactly. Our duty is to the court and not to the client. Yes, exactly. So it'd be interesting to see
how I cope with that.
Yeah, we'll have you back in a year's time or something to see how it's going.
I think it's like anything, it's probably a tiny, tiny minority of people because pretty much everybody I've met throughout my career has been outstanding. So yeah, we just got to make sure as the new generation of FIs work in private sector, we're making that change. And I have to say, the people that I've met within the company that I work for, we've already spoken about that already over lunch or in the office, we're already talking about it. So the fact that we're even aware of it means that we can stop it from happening in the future.
Exactly. I picked up on something you said there as well. It's like I found one of the biggest plus points for me really in the private sector is that it is my case. In the police, obviously, we as CSIs, as FIs in CSI, we turn up, we might work with obviously a fire service FI, we might have a forensic scientist there, Prometheus or fire scientist as they like to be known. And we might work in that sort of area. But afterwards, once we've done our investigation, we very rarely might not see the end result. Whereas in the private sector, I really like it and say this is my case and I can follow up and do the CCTV review and do all those good things. So it's really multidisciplinary, but it's my case at the end of the day.
I mean, that as well, the investigation side of things is what we love as well, isn't it? It's not just about the science, it's also about the investigation, and it's not owning a case, but seeing it from start to finish and being able to make sure that you've done it to the fullest that you can, and that you're doing the whole of that case. You're doing the science, but you're also doing the run-up, you're doing the witness statements, you're doing the CCTV, you're doing your social media checks, you're doing all of that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that side of it as well. And you get to know the end result, because sometimes as a CSI, you can just get caught up in job after job after job.
Exactly.
And you don't always get to know the end result, do you?
Yeah, and normally CID or a major crime investigation team, they're normally having a drink down the pub after a successful job, and it's your evidence that's helped get that conviction or all that.
There has been a change. So especially where I used to work, they're starting to move much more towards making CSIs aware, because that's why you do the job, isn't it? You
know, yeah, exactly.
You get job satisfaction out of knowing that what you're doing has led to a good result. So actually where I've come from, they've got a lot better at making CSIs aware. And I mean, there were jobs that I were involved in where I actually would go out for like drinks after with barristers and all that kind of thing on big jobs, just because it's important to recognise what you've achieved as a team, really.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I always say from a fire investigation and a crime scene investigation point, we're the evidence recoverers, but we've moved. When I first started, we were very much evidence gatherers and seen as evidence gatherers, yes. And that was it. Whereas now much more, and I think it's a bit cheesy, but since CSI and the change in title, just that change in title, we are investigators as opposed to just evidence gatherers. I haven't heard the word, just can you come down and forensicate something, in a long time, but it used to happen all the time. Or just come down and do some fingerprinting. Well, of what? For what reason? So, yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting.
It's been a nice move.
Yeah. Well, I know you'll be successful, Liz, because you're successful in everything you do. So,
oh, thanks.
One thing I picked up on was you said you're a people person. I think we might have slightly different motivations, in the sense of, are you still a people person after 15 years of dealing with probably the lesser pleasant side of life?
I definitely say I like people. I like interacting with people. I just like sociology, psychology of people as well. I would say I'm naturally quite a positive person, which I think really does irritate quite a lot of people a lot of the time. I have to say, like, the 15 years in the police, absolutely loved it. I don't think I was getting to a point where I wasn't like enjoying the job due to the crimes that I was dealing with. I could still quite happily go and do that. So I would definitely say that I think I will actually miss those jobs as well. I'll miss those really high profile, really interesting, dynamic cases, that team environment. But yeah, I would definitely say I am a people person, but I would also say I'm quite technical. I would class myself as, like, to be cheesy, a pracademic. Like, I would say I'm definitely practical, but I'm also really into technical academia side of things as well. So I think those skills are really important in FI, because you need to stay at the top of your game technically, but you also need to be practical. You need to be able to work hard, but you also need to be able to interview people, deal with witnesses and that kind of thing. So definitely really good to have people skills. I don't know, do you still feel like you're a people person, or do you feel like you're not anymore?
No, I'm still definitely a people person. Definitely a people person. Some people do it for the victims, and I was kind of the reverse. I always wanted to catch the person that did it. And I think from a psychological point of view, from a mental health point of view, I sort of flipped that switch very early on in my career, in the sense of, didn't really want to deal with what happened to the victims, if you're talking about a murder or deliberate fire to cover up a murder or something like that. But it was less about the victims and more about the suspects, and trying to obviously catch the right person that had done it. But yeah, that's interesting.
Self-preservation, isn't it? If you think too much about you, it's awful. But if you get downtrodden with victims and dead and children and things like that, you have to protect yourself, because it can be a very dark job.
Definitely. I know the fire service guys, they deal with road traffic accidents and that kind of stuff as well as the bodies in the fire. And obviously we come along, we have to recover that body and do certain processes and techniques with that body to recover it properly for forensic evidence. So I'm not going to harp on about it in the podcast, but I think it's something that's much better understood and much better focused on, you know, with the old TRIM training and that kind of mental welfare stuff. So yeah, that's good.
I was very privileged in my old force. They actually trained me to be a TRIM assessor. It was something I was really interested in, because again, I'm a people person. So I have to say that that process, since it's been introduced, has been really successful, not just in CSI, but in the police forces in general, really, really successful at supporting people and helping people. The sooner we can help people, the better, really.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think I remember when I first started, you had to fill out a form if you had any mental health issues, and everyone used to, whether you had or whether you hadn't. And at that stage of my life, I hadn't had any mental health issues, because I hadn't seen what I was going to see for the next, you know, 30 odd years. But no one ever said yes, because if you put yes on a, you were out. It was as simple as that, you know. I'm glad that's kind of changed and things are much better. And I know some of your colleagues are, well, most police forces, obviously, majority of police forces have a responsibility now for that kind of mental half issue. I was just interested in terms of any kind of interesting case that you dealt with. I think you dealt with one in Bristol. You could sort of tell the audience about that and your experiences with that.
Yeah, as a CSI or as an FI?
Either.
Yeah, it's one of the main cases that I had quite a lot of involvement in was the murder of a young, I think she was 15 or 16 year old girl who was then dismembered as well. Quite a high profile case in Bristol. Very interesting. So I actually was working in the DNA laboratory at the time for that one and examined a lot of the property there that was involved in that case and was also involved in the post-mortem. Very interesting case. Also, it's very, very tragic, but actually got to give evidence in Crown Court for that one. And that was quite an interesting process, shall we say. Yeah, I got cross-examined for just sort of, I think if I remember correctly, probably about 2 hours.
Okay, so
it was quite an intense process, that one. Yeah. And it was all to do with like DNA regulations, ISO 17025 and that kind of thing. So very interesting case and two convictions as a result of it. So it was very successful for the force that I was working for at the time.
Yeah. And what about FI-wise? Anything on the FI side?
Yes, I mean, we've had some high-profile FIs as well. One that sticks in my mind was actually a hate crime where a poor chap was beaten and then set on fire. And I did the post-mortem for that one. Very interesting case. Been involved in, actually, just before I left the police, my first job I crime scene managed, actually, was a fatal fire with a poor, elderly, vulnerable lady. And she'd set fire to herself, actually, using cigarette butts, believe it or not.
Okay.
Accidental. Yeah. So that came in as suspicious initially, but we managed to bottom that one out. Yeah, some real cases that stick in your mind. But I mean, throughout what it's like, Mike, you deal with lots of different things throughout your career, everything from accidental deaths involving fire, hate crimes. Mental health is massively on the up. A lot of mental health involving fire. So arson with intent, really. But yeah, nice varied career, I think, so far. Really looking forward to getting more into the technical side of things, electrical engineering, that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to the private side. You get involved in the, obviously, the CCTV more and more and also the alarm settings and, you know, sprinkler systems and all that. For me, it was kind of a refresh in the sense of had to learn new skills and understand new technologies. And the great thing about most of the FI firms is that they've got an expert in something. You know, they've got an expert in sprinkler systems. They've got an expert in fire alarm systems. So you're never really alone. You can always reach out. It's a great little family in that way, I think. Well, I've certainly found in the two firms that I've worked for anyway, but yeah, good.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a nice WhatsApp group going and that kind of thing. And I know I can lean on my electrical engineers, my fire safety experts, all those people. So I think definitely if you want to keep learning, for me, like I'm the type of person, I don't want to stop learning. I think the day you think you know everything and the day, you know, tomorrow is always a cool day for me. Yeah, exactly. And in fire as well, everything's changing all the time, isn't it? Materials that are being used. Lithium-ion batteries, perfect example of something really new. Is that going to be the new chip pan fire? We'll see, won't we? But I think in fire investigation, you really need to stay at that sort of sharp, pointy end because it's a very dynamic, changing environment. And I think that's why I love it, because I don't ever want to stop learning, really.
Yeah, exactly. In the teaser episode, I'm really passionate about fire investigation in the sense of it's new challenges. It's always different. There's different things to learn constantly. It is constantly changing. The trends are changing. Techniques are changing, you know, like bio oils. I know you're interested in the lithium battery side of things, and I'm quite interested in the bio oils and whether the canines can research them and search for them and that kind of stuff. So hoping to have Andy on from Hampshire Fire Service at some point with his dog, Andy, or Philip. Podcast. You were there again. Yeah. I don't know if the dog will be on, but maybe the dog could be on. I don't know, why not? Yeah, but I think, you know, that's really interesting in a sense of, but I think the great thing about a lot of our colleagues are engineers or were engineers, and obviously I've got an engineering background, but I think at my CSI side, my observational skills and my logic and my reasoning were invaluable. Sometimes I would see things that other people didn't see. And I think that's the skill of a CSI, is that it sounds a bit cliche, but we are, if you're not a trained observer, then you rapidly become one because you're constantly looking. Yes. For 8-hour shift and longer. So I think CSIs might not have a PhD from Oxford, for example, in thermodynamics or fire engineering. And I think that's the thing to say is that, you know, if you look at all of the firms and also the CSI teams are made up of diverse sort of background of people.
Yeah, people. Yeah. I have to say, I think the CSIs have a lot of skills which are applicable. It's mixing that practical skill element with then if you can get your education up, it's going to give you that background. But I have to say, a lot of the skills that you learn in CSI, things like archaeological techniques, excavating, it's very applicable, it's very transferable, I would definitely say. But
well, photography is a third of our job, isn't it, as a CSI? Arguably, probably more than half of the job as an FI, because you often go to the scene and then you do your opinion of it a little bit later when you had time to analyse and look at things and get that other data, the fire alarm data, the CCTV, all that good stuff. Because that always, I think that's the difference. Sometimes in the police environment, we get that information pretty quickly because we have the authority and the powers to do so. Whereas on the private side, sometimes if they want to give it,
I was just going to say, as a CSI, you're almost like a piece of the jigsaw puzzle, whereas as an FI, you are the jigsaw. Does that make sense?
And like, yeah, definitely.
You're normally all of it, or you're part of it, and maybe you get your little like electrical engineer that can add something, or you get your sprinkler person who can add something. But I think as a CSI, you're a small part of a jigsaw, whereas as an FI, you're probably all that. You control that jigsaw, if that makes sense. So you've got more ownership.
I think I knew a CSI who worked for fire investigation, forensic engineering, fire investigation firm in Canada. She was British, but she used to just go out and do all the documentation. She used to do all the maps, all the sketches, all the photography, all the notes, because she wasn't a licensed in the US and in Canada. They have to be a licensed engineer, professional engineer. So you can't opine on things like that unless you've got your PE status. So the only real way you can do that in the States is if you've done an engineering degree and you also go for the PE license sort of process, engineering training, that kind of stuff. And I think that kind of shows the skill of a CSI, is that this CSI was able to go out and do a good enough job for other engineers to then opine upon what her notes and her sketch plans and her photography at that fire scene. So I think that's really where our skills come in. And then as you develop them as time goes on. But
it's that a meticulous, methodical, logistical, isn't it? It's those things that you're just applying to a different type of scene, really, aren't you?
Exactly, exactly. You mentioned Mary Jane there. With Cranfield, is there a plan to do an MSc or anything? Because I know there's an MSc in UCLan. I think they do an MSc in fire investigation, but I don't know if Cranfield intending to develop any kind of MSc program in fire investigation. I know they do one in...
The one that I did was Forensic Investigation of Explosions and Explosives. There is talk of maybe developing the MSc. Yeah, I had a chat with someone while I was up at Cranfield a couple of weeks ago running the Introduction to Fire Investigation, actually. So there is talk of that going on. I mean, Cranfield University, fantastic university. Not just saying that because I now work there, but the networking that I've had there and the people I've met, I don't know if you'd get that at another university. I really don't think. I've met so many people from private sector, public sector, counterterrorism, archaeology, people from every single nuclear police I think I've met. I've met people from abroad. I just don't know where else you would meet that diverse level of people and have the opportunity to network. I mean, you know, I've met somebody from part of security and anti-terrorism within Denmark. Amazing people. Cranfield's really got a lot to offer, and that's why I've decided to sort of move forward with them and start thinking about teaching there, because it's a good institute to be involved with, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think when I ran a couple of the courses there, we had a couple of guys from the Air Accident Investigation Branch who had just come for like the specialist knowledge of the fire side of things. There was another guy from a rocket company, and there was an explosives engineer as well. So, yeah, it's a really diverse background. There's military, because I think Cranfield's got a fairly close cause. It obviously was based at Royal Military College, or the Defence Academy, as they call it now. So it was based at Shrivenham on their main site. So I think they've always had close links with military, and I think with military across the world, I think that allows, and civil defence like Portendown, DSTL, those kinds of organisations. So some of the projects they've got, some of the PhDs they've got going are really great. I mean, we're sounding a little bit like an advert for Cranfield, really, but I don't work there anymore, but I wouldn't push them unless I believe they are a really good institute. But of course, there are other organisations out there. I mean, I know UCLan and their fire investigation, a lot of colleagues have been through that, and a lot of people have got great things to say about that as well.
I was going to say, the only reason I didn't really study with UCLan was because it wasn't going to work with me with working. I picked Cranfield because they do the modular system as well. So if you're working full time, you can split it out part time and attend a week. So you've got to do 11 modules and do those when it suits you, really. UCLan is meant to be very, very good as well. I've just met somebody actually who's done his master's there, and he said it was outstanding.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're going to hopefully have Steve, a sort of leader up there, on at some point. I'm hoping to tempt him on. I don't think he knows that yet, but I'm definitely going to ask him.
I'm sure you're sweet talking.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. But of course, there's other organisations. Are you a member of any certifications, you know, organisations? Are you a member of National Association UK AFI?
Yeah, definitely. So I've joined UKFI just recently, actually. I was a member of the International Association of Arson Investigators, and I was very privileged, actually, to have a chat with Dr. Peter Mansey. I just reached out to him, and he was so kind. He said, yeah, let's set up a little Zoom meeting, and I had a chat with him, and he gave me some good advice. But yeah, I met Emma Wilson, who works for Prometheus.
Yeah.
And I think she's one of the core people that run UKFI. And I've just joined that, actually. So that's another good one. I think if you're looking at getting into FI and you want to meet people, network, then I can't, unfortunately, make the conference this year. I wasn't lucky enough to get a ticket, but I think you're attending, aren't you?
Going on the John Lentini course, which is the 3-day course after. Nice. I'm still trying to pressurize him to let me into the conference because, again, I missed it as well because work delayed the decision and then I missed out on the place. But I'm still hoping that I get a cancellation. But yeah, you mentioned Emma there. Emma's the past president. James Acott is the current president. But yeah, I think, you know, I agree with you. Not just in the UK, there's lots of chapters. There's a Gulf Association of Fire Investigation here in Dubai. And there's various different chapters all around the world. There's one in South Africa. I think there's one in Brazil. It's a real international
one as well.
Yeah, there's a real international organization. And I went on a 40-hour introduction to fire investigation course in San Antonio. Yeah, that was very nice. Thank you, Lee Masson from Statethic, for sending me. Yeah, that was great. It was a really interesting course. I think we do things slightly different here in the States. I mean, they are very much, the Bible is the NFPA 921 and 1033, and they really do stick to it. But I think they come under a lot more scrutiny in the court system than we do. They have to, you know, almost fight to prove that they're actually legitimate to give evidence every single time. But I think that's a good thing. And I think NFPA will influence and come further and further, and it should do because it teaches you about the scientific method, and it's really certainly one of the textbooks I've got, you know, next to me. I've got John Lentini's book as well next to me, and I've got John DeHaan's Kirk's book as well. So those are real three sort of mainstay of my reading list and my referral. And the Ignition Handbook as well, there's another one, but that's very expensive, but it's incredibly useful.
Most of them seem to be very expensive books, but I agree. We all seem to tend to work, I mean, NFPA is the standard, isn't it? That's the way we should be working in the scientific.
Exactly.
I have to say, that's another thing going from CSI to fire investigation is, I was teaching some CSIs actually, FI this week, and it's learning about the scientific method and understanding that approach, even applying that approach to just standard investigation anyway, not even fire investigation. I spoke to somebody who works in SO15 and working at that high level, he said he applies that scientific approach to CSI within SO15. So it's so core to FI, but there's so many principles about it, which are so applicable to other methods of investigation. I think we should be starting to apply that more just to general investigation as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. Yeah, SO15 is counterterrorism squad of the UK Metropolitan Police, well, the UK, really. They cover all counterterrorism. Was that Chris? Was that Chris Hester?
It was Chris Hester, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So have Chris on as well. He's got a massive amount of experience. So
he has. He's exceptional.
Okay. Yeah, so Luce, what would you say to someone who's currently, I don't know how you were inspired. I mean, it's clear to me that you wanted to be an investigator very early on, the same as me. From about 8 or 9 years old, I wanted to be a detective, and where we are, forensic detectives, really. What advice would you give to someone? I'm conscious that you're a woman. I can tell just by looking at you. What would you say to someone? Well, maybe we can discuss as well about the CSI. It does tend to be dominated by female operators, I think mainly because they're better at it. But I think the FI world is slightly more orientated towards the males population, but there are numerous females. Have you sort of faced any challenges in that way? Do you perceive any challenges in that way?
I mean, throughout my career, it's that standard thing of like going to a job with a bloke, really, and them always turning around and speaking to the man before they talk to me. I think it's just that standard thing, isn't it? I'd be lying if I said I haven't encountered things like misogyny and that kind of thing throughout my career. What I would say is it's just about being professional, really. And it's about proving yourself as well. You shouldn't really have to prove yourself, but it's just about making sure your reputation, you're as good as your reputation. So what I would say is if you do encounter those things as a woman, it's about challenging them professionally. Also about when you're dealing with people who are younger than you or who you're mentoring, it's about making sure that you're making that change, that you're role modeling what is appropriate behavior as well. I'd be lying if I said I haven't encountered it, but yeah, I am going to be working in a predominantly male environment. That's not a problem for me. I don't mind working with men, but it's just about being as good as your reputation women are just as good as guys in pretty much everything. It's not making a thing out of it, is it? But it's recognizing it when it does happen and challenging it. Definitely. Just being professional and challenging it.
Good. Okay. And if you were, let's take you back now to 15, 20 years ago, if you could speak to yourself now, what advice would you sort of give yourself to end up where you are now? Is there anything you would do quicker? Was there anything that you would perhaps do differently?
I would definitely say just have confidence in yourself. I think when I first started out just as a CSI, it's a very intimidating environment as like a 24-year-old. You're surrounded by people with amazing amounts of experience. What I would say is soak that up, be a sponge, soak all that experience up, be open to learning, but also have confidence in your ability. It's just that I always call it like a quiet confidence.
Definitely.
Be confident. Just be quietly confident. Be professional with that confidence as well. I think if I could change anything, it's hard to say. I would probably say I've gone into education and decided to change my career just as I decided to start a family. So it's been quite challenging. I've got a nearly 4-year-old and a just coming up 1-year-old. And I've been doing a master's throughout that and writing a thesis. So that's been challenging. So I probably should have started that before I started thinking about having a family. It would have made my life a lot easier, but I like a challenge. Yeah. But I would say to anybody starting off new in the job, just be a sponge, soak everything up. Your reputation, stick to that, have your integrity and honesty, and just work hard, really. People are going to want to work with you if you work hard and you're a good person to work with. Bring biscuits always helps. If you ever turn up to a job, be the person that brings the biscuits.
Certainly.
Because people love you.
Definitely.
Bring biscuits.
Yeah, and not the cheap ones either. Bring some decent, bring some custard creams and some bourbons.
Some bourbons. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Some bourbons. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Luce, thank you ever so much for coming on. I think we'll call it a day there, and I really appreciate your time. As I said, you are the pioneer. I hope I get better at this as time goes on, but you've been absolutely fantastic. So I knew you would be, which is why I wanted you on very early on in the podcast series. And thanks very much for your time. Thanks very much for your effort. And I really look forward to seeing how you develop, and hopefully you'll come back on at some point and tell us, and maybe give us the idea is to have some themes as we go along. And so I know that you are doing some research maybe around some lithium batteries and bits and pieces, and you know, it'd be fantastic to have you back on at some point to discuss that. So thanks ever so much, Luce. Is there anything else you'd just like to say before you go, or are you done?
Yeah. No, thanks so much for inviting me. It's an absolute pleasure. Really looking forward to seeing where this podcast goes. It's exciting times. So yeah, thank you so much, Mike. It's an absolute pleasure to speak to you and work with you as always.
All right, thanks ever so much, Luce. You take care, and I'll hopefully see you on a job someday.
We'll see you around about.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you for listening to CSI on Fire. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and suggest future topics on our webpage. Remember, factor, non-verba. Take care. Good hunting.